This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Jacques Cousteau, the late world-renowned oceanographer, once described Pulau Sipadan in Sabah as an untouched piece of art. But Sipadan is just one of the many breathtaking islands in Sabah, whose waters are renowned for its exceptional marine biodiversity and beautiful, healthy coral reefs. So if you're looking for your next Chuti Chuti Malaysia underwater adventure, find out why Sabah's islands should be on that list from Johnny Chu, the owner of Dive Borneo Bas Sendirian Berhad, and he's also a qualified Padi course director and tech instructor trainer, and he's joining me on the show today. Welcome, Johnny. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine. How about yourself?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. So very excited. We're going to be talking about diving and all sorts of underwater adventures in Sabah. But, you know, as I mentioned, you are a qualified Padi course director. You're a tech instructor trainer. I understand you've been a Padi instructor since you were 18 years old. Am I correct?
Yes, you are. Since I was, 18. Mm-hmm. I was actually recorded as the youngest instructor at that time.
Wow. And you've been doing this and you've been in the diving industry for over 30 years now. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. So obviously we're talking to the right person here. And today, of course, the focus is on Sabah's waters in particular, right? And they're just known for exceptional marine biodiversity, and Sabah's coral reefs are home to some of the largest, most varied communities of marine life on Earth. Maybe you can talk to me about life underwater in Sabah.
Literally, Sabah is covered with 1,700 over kilometers of coastline. And we are also very fortunate to be located quite near, or you can say on the equatorial. And so we have the tropics. And also, Sabah is the only state in Malaysia that we are actually in the coral triangle itself. Just in the edge of the coral triangle. So, and the coral, of course, the coral triangle itself is known for its biodiversity as well, for marine life.
On that note, on the coral triangle, for those who are not familiar, you know, why is it so important? You know, why is it like globally something that is so widely recognized for conservation especially?
Okay, good question. I will have to admit that I'm not really the best person to speak in detail, but I will share with you on the layman side of it. Now, the coral triangle itself, it came about in the early 2000s or late 90s, where they drew up a line between Philippines, Indonesia, East Timor, up to the Solomons, and even Papua New Guinea itself, and of course, past Malaysia. And Sabah happened to be in it, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And of course, the way you look at the coral triangle is either you are a man of faith and you believe that higher beings that created all the Almighty created beautiful life like such, or you look into the scientific way that it's literally the evolution of nature being millions of years ago where the platonic shift happened, where this is the center, epic center of biodiversity itself for the marine life. And also topped with the largest mangrove forest itself. All this playing in part to make it the place itself. And researchers are still trying to figure out why, and they have several theories to it. But then again, without going into too much of a detail, literally it's the place where the biodiversity of marine life is the epic center of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. And it's, as we said, you know, a global priority for conservation. And I mean, talk to me a little bit about the rich biodiversity and marine life that can be found there. You know, what are some of the unique creatures that we can actually come across when we get into the waters there?
The ocean itself, we all know that 71% of the earth is water, right? It is literally water. And literally life is abundant in there. And I'm not going to go into the political debate on how the humans' consumption is actually affecting the ocean world. That will be another discussion or topic to
yep.
say. But it's the coral triangle itself is actually because of the location and biodiversity with the corals itself, where you have various species ranging from hard to soft to living, to types of different types of corals. It provides habitats and also food for the other fishes, for the other marine life, like such as fish, rays, or eels, turtles, and all this. So it's a big whole ecosystem, and that's what makes the biodiversity itself grow.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we can't talk about the waters without talking about the corals, right? And that, of course, you know, is the foundation of all the life in there, isn't it?
It is, yes. Just to add on that, it's a cycle. It requires both. It's a symbiotic relationship between the fish and the corals. It's a whole ecosystem itself.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very delicate balance. And, you know, if things go out of proportion, I mean, you know, that's how it gets disrupted and that's where issues come. But so that's why we need to really conserve and protect these areas, isn't it?
Precisely.
Okay. All right. Well, let's now, well, dive into diving in Sabah, if you'll forgive the pun. So as I mentioned in my intro earlier, I keep coming across this, you know, that the late Jacques Cousteau, that world-renowned oceanographer, you know, he described Pulau Sipadan as an untouched piece of art, right? And I know divers around the world have voted it as one of the top five dive sites in the world. I mean, talk to me about Sipadan in particular. You know, why is it considered a top site for diving? Are you a fan of the area? You know, tell me about it.
I'm a super fan of Sipadan.
Not surprised.
I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud. I'm being a Sabahan myself. And actually, I was born not too far from Sipadan, literally.
How lovely.
And I was, again, very fortunate that I was one of those who used to live in the island. 1990, right up to 94, I was living there. Now, but that's besides the point. Why Sipadan is great itself, as what you were quoting Jacques Cousteau was mentioning. That little island is approximately 12 hectares big, and the coral reef itself is actually a wall drop off down to approximately 600 meters around the island. And within that island, the closest place is approximately 16 nautical miles away. There's no other reef structure whatsoever. So what happens is, and also being its strategic location and also not really the best fishing environment, that area tend to allow the coral growth itself and also abundance of fish to grow over time. Mm. And of course, this is the positive part of the human interaction when the divers started going there in the mid-80s into the island. There are more protection over it, less and less destruction was seen at Sipadan. And over the years, it just got better and better. But of course, it will come to a point in time when there are too many divers there. Mm. Does create an effect, negative impact to Sipadan Island itself. So, but again, the beautiful part of it, it's just within this island, all this marine life. Imagine you are actually living in an apartment that all the marine life are just there in the island. They're just living there. So that's why the density is high. You're looking at the high density apartment or so, per se.
Okay.
And for us divers, we like it when we go to an area like that where we can see so much thing in one area. We don't have to travel too far. It's not too widespread. And just, you know, one angle of looking, you can see thousands of fish in the view.
Wow.
Yeah, and turtles everywhere.
Wow.
Turtles, literally turtles everywhere.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I was reading that there's even a turtle tomb there. There's so many turtles that they have their own special tomb in that area.
Yes.
Is that true?
Actually, yes, it is true. Okay, literally for us, we call it caves or caverns, right? There are two there.
Yeah.
Yes, the more famous one is the turtle cavern, and then another one is the turtle tomb. Now, as much as it sounds like a tomb, as if the turtles go in there to die, like, you know, it's not literal. It's more of the turtles going, were trying to find a ledge to rest. The problem with being a wall is they don't have enough bottom for the turtles to rest when they're sleeping at night. So they will try to find ledges and so on. And that could be the hole or entrance to the cave. And in the dark, and they might just continue swimming inwards, and turtles are air breathing reptilians, where they actually get lost and in the darkness and drown. So and that's why it's called a tomb, because of all the turtle skeleton being in there and so on.
I see. Okay. That's a bit of a sad story there then.
Yes, it is.
Okay. But I mean, you know, that is nature at work, I suppose, right?
And It is.
Yeah. And a very natural thing that is happening. And of course, thousands of species of fish, right? I mean, for anyone who's listening and who's just curious what sorts of fish they can see there, what are some that you can name?
Well, I'll just touch on to the what is famous there.
Sure.
Okay, what is literally the barracudas. Everybody who goes to Sipadan, they want to see the schooling barracudas. When I talk about the schooling barracudas, we're talking about 2,000 to 3,000, or even sometimes in a good day, you can go up to 5,000 of these barracudas twirling around and, you know, doing a formation like a dance, just swimming around the divers or that areas. And this itself is a wondrous image. It's just a magnificent image that it's one of those times, like it can be considered as a bucket list just to be there to view that. And then we have the schooling humphead parrotfish, this big fish, which they have a really hardened head. And what they do is they use their head to crush the corals to eat, sort of for feeding.
Okay.
And they go by the hundreds. And then you have the schooling fusiliers, the jacks in 10,000s, you know, we are talking about the big numbers. It's just a magnificent view itself, yeah. Other things that you can see are like rays, turtles everywhere. Sharks, for those non-divers, probably everybody have this fear about sharks and so on. Mm-hmm. But the sharks there are really friendly. Typical Malaysian sharks, you know, they are very friendly. And small in size as well. We have the black-tip sharks, white-tip sharks. And then we have also the grey reef sharks. And time and again, you get the schooling hammerhead as well. So we have all this wondrous, wonderful marine life in Sipadan itself.
Yeah. Oh my God, it sounds amazing. I need to book my next ticket there to Sabah. But of course, you know, you talked about conserving the place, right? And, you know, keeping it in its pristine condition. Am I correct that there's no accommodation on the island? And, you know, there's all these rules in place, right, to protect it. And even those who wish to dive there require a permit, you know, those sorts of things. How does one actually get there and, you know, come for a dive trip over there?
Okay. When the early days of Sipadan, people used to stay in the island, but obviously over time, because of the numbers of visitors has gone up high, and also it is actually starting to stress out the island itself. The government did research and got the finding that it's best for everybody to leave the island. So all the operators decided to leave the island, which agreed to, and everybody moved off to Mabul Island or Kapalai Island, which are nearby, mm-hmm. and some even operating from mainland itself, mainland Sampona. So to dive there, literally, you just do day trips from whichever island you're staying at. Let's say the most common island will be Mabul Island, but Mabul Island itself is a destination. It's a good dive destination. And on a good day, Mabul Island, if you were to take the boat, the speedboat, to get over to Sipadan on a good day, it takes probably approximately 15, 20 minutes. But on average, about half an hour, considering that's way free, because you're dealing with the open sea anyway. So most people will stay either on Mabul Island or mainland or even Kapalai Island, and they'll do a day trip. They'll leave early morning, dive Sipadan, 3 to 4 dives, and then they'll head back to wherever they're staying.
Okay.
And yes, there is a permit due. And the truth is, unfortunately, COVID took a bad toll for the tourism industry in Sabah itself, especially for Sampona area. When I mentioned Sampona, that's including of Mabul and Sipadan. There's not a lot of international tourists. So as Malaysian, this is a good time to go, and where permits are abundant, you see. And the normal daily numbers, maximum numbers, is kept at 178. I believe it's still the same, 178, which is spread among the resorts, which the entitled resorts to take the number of guests into Sipadan. So yeah, if any Malaysians, no plans, this is a good time to go. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Johnny Chu. He is the owner of Dive Borneo Bar, Sendirian Berhad. He's the boss there, basically. He's also a qualified party course director and tech instructor trainer. We're talking all about Sabah today and why that should be next on our Chuti Chuti Malaysia list, especially if we're going for a diving holiday. We'll come back after this quick break and find out more about some of the other islands off the coast of Sabah. Keep it right here on Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today is Johnny Chu. He's the owner of Dive Borneo Bar, Sendirian Berhad. He's a qualified party course director and tech instructor trainer. He's an avid diver. He's been doing it since, he's been an instructor since he was 18 years old. He's been in the diving industry for over 30 years. And today we're talking about going diving in Sabah and why that should be next on your Chuti Chuti Malaysia list. So before the break, Johnny, you know, telling us all about Pulau Sipadan, which basically sounds like a little piece of heaven on earth, right? But that is, of course, just one of the islands. What about some of the other places, the other islands that, is a good place to go diving?
Well, again, Sabah is blessed. Like I was mentioned earlier on, we are blessed with 1,700 kilometers of coastline. So literally, everywhere is diveable in Sabah. But in terms of realistic diving with enjoyment and also with proper logistics, there are quite a few still. Right, like for example, if we're talking about Sampona area, Sampona itself, a lot of people discounted the fact that Sampona, the northern islands in Sampona, is actually a destination, and northern island Sampona is actually recognized for its 1,001 dive sites.
Okay,
imagine that. So wow. It'll take years before anybody will finish diving the whole of Sampona itself. And but everybody is just focused on Sipadan, Mabul, and Kapalai. But yeah, northern Sampona itself has got a lot to offer. And then if you move up north, a little bit up north, you go over to Lada too. We have some destination then, not the greatest, but still good fun for an adventure or exploration. Especially we have our mini blue hole. Nothing great, but again, something interesting to look, what we divers say, to lock our dives on. Yeah. And then coming up to even in Sendakan, you go further up north, or in Sendakan itself, we have this Langkayan Island. Again, it's a great holiday destination. Why Sendakan? That's the only island for diving. And also for those who are interested to look at how the turtle lays eggs, or even how the eggs hatch, there's an island nearby called Selingan Island where they can visit and watch how the whole experience of the turtle egg laying and also hatching goes. Mm-hmm. And then if you go further up north, we have Kudat, which is seasonal. Unfortunately, everywhere in Sabah, with 300, you can dive 365 days a year, except for Kudat site. But literally, Kudat is known for the blue water, and it's a great place for people who just want to go there and get a lot of selfies. Fantastic selfies for the YouTubers. They love it. Yeah, they just go out there, get themselves in blue water, and they just post all their images they want.
Okay.
And then coming back closer to Kota Kinabalu, we have even Kota Pelud itself, and even Kota Kinabalu, where I'm situated, where it's the Tunku Abdul Rahman Parks, the famous Tunku Abdul Rahman Parks, and also Spanga Island, right? The beautiful part about this thing is it's very close to mainland and in the capital of Sabah. For us, if we were to leave, we normally do day trips off Kota Kinabalu. Mm-hmm. And the moment we jump onto the boat and we head up to the islands, within 15 minutes, we are there in the world dive sites. But obviously, the diving there, it is near mainland. So in order to get better diving, you sometimes need to travel a little bit more to the back of the islands or to the outer side of the islands, which is maybe another additional 10 minutes. So not that far itself.
Wow.
And you get good diving, and then we'll do what we call muck diving then. Kota Kinabalu has a lot of muck diving to offer itself. Yeah.
Can you explain what muck diving is? I mean, I kept coming across that and I wasn't sure what it meant, you know, and I'm glad that you're here to sort of explain what that is.
Okay. Muck diving is for divers after diving a long time, after seeing a lot of turtles, sharks, big fishes, you know, table coral fish, or the coral fish, or what we call table fish, yeah, you tend to start going for the more unique marine life. Mm. When I say unique, that means they are like, they might give you the impression of being an alien because they don't look real.
You. Wow.
Some could be scary.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Indian sea walker, for example, you know, the devil fish and all this. They are really unique and mean looking, but they're beautiful, especially for photographers. All right. And one thing good that when the digital age came in, cameras have been made quite compact and affordable for everybody to afford to go diving and bring an underwater camera system down. So there are a lot of photographers and divers who have dived quite a bit will love all this. Yeah. And we have flamboyant cuttlefish, you know, blue ring octopus, all these weird things. The reason why it's called muck diving, it's got its name from diving in mucky area, mucky or muddy, right? Muck, that means it's usually on the sandy or broken coral area, or even it's just silty, literally. And it's mucky, but you will find all these unique things like box crabs and so on. And they even have weird names. So even, let's talk about you know, one of the common things where we show people in Spanga Island is the zebra nose seahorse.
Okay.
Wow. It's a bit confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the unique species we have in Spanga Island, right? It's called the zebra nose seahorse. It's a seahorse, literally. I'm sure you can imagine what a seahorse is. Yeah. And then the nose itself has got zebra stripes in it. And so we have a lot of these weird things, and sometimes you think that the, you know, nature really have a sense of humor. So,
so I mean, okay, so many different things there. I mean, how about for you? You know, for someone who's been doing this for so long, you know, what is your personal favorite thing, or most unique encounter or experience from all your different diving trips? I mean, I know it's hard to name one, but if you had to pick,
it's hard to pick, but. I would say probably being able to dive with the whale sharks. It's seasonal. And in Kuta Kinabalu, we are very lucky that between January and March, these big fellas will swim near the coast because it's krill's feeding time. And for us, we try to hunt for them. And we say hunt for them, not go hunting, but literally try to look for them and dive with them. And they're just beautiful, gracious creatures. Yeah.
Okay.
The whale sharks itself. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
That's usually from January to March, around that time.
Okay, all right. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about diving, but, you know, some of us maybe are not so comfortable diving, right? But snorkeling is also definitely an option, right? I mean, I've personally been to the islands off Kuta Kinabalu that you just mentioned. I went for a snorkeling trip. That was one of the most happiest experiences of my life. You know, you just walk off the beach and gosh, there's all these amazing underwater creatures there, just as, you know, walk off the beach itself. What about snorkeling over there? You know, what are some options?
Yes, it's everywhere. Where there's diving, there's snorkeling. And if you don't dive for... Well, the truth is, if you're going to be all the way in Kuta Kinabalu and you can't swim, and if you somehow or other have the fear or have the psychological fear, I would say, that diving is not for you.
Yeah. You're talking about me right here. Sorry.
Try to sign up for this program called the Discover Scuba Diving, the proper one. Not the what some may call it try dive. They just take you in the water and dunk you and come and bring you back up. Okay. But I'm talking about try the Discover Scuba Diving, where they have a proper qualified instructor, paddy instructor, will teach you, or whoever who's not tried diving before, teach you several fundamental skills. And then after doing that, they'll take you down to approximately 6 to 9 meters around that depth, not deeper than 12 meters, with supposedly low ratio, and all focus on you and to let you experience diving. And if you tend after that, if you really find that diving is not for you, yeah, continue snorkeling. And snorkeling is the beautiful thing about snorkeling is you can do it yourself. But again, there if not, most dive companies also offer, like ours itself, we offer snorkeling packages as well, where we will have dive guides or snorkeling guides to accompany you to take care of your safety. Yeah. So okay. Snorkeling is also a way to go in Kuta Kinabalu if you wish to. But before just looking into snorkeling, go try Discover Scuba Diving.
Okay. All right. I need to come and try that the next time I'm in Sabah. And, you know, while we're on the conversation about scuba diving and snorkeling on coral reefs, right, it's also important to understand the impact, right, of these activities on coral reefs, on the marine wildlife, in order to, of course, you know, protect and preserve the environment, isn't it? How would you say we can dive and snorkel responsibly, you know, with as little impact as possible on the natural environment? I mean, what are some do's and don'ts, I suppose?
The truth is, there are a lot of do's and don'ts all listed everywhere. It's all quite, if you walk into a marine park, all the do's and don'ts are really listed there, like do not throw rubbish, do not pick up corals, do not do this, do not do that. But my advice, what I would like to always tell people is just use your common sense. You know, common sense is plenty. Everybody has it. Please use it. Like, for example, for divers, I will always tell them, use your common sense to dive, you know, what is meant for diving, how meant diving is supposed to be. And we also need to, not just on conservation, we also have to look at safety. So literally, for me, I will always tell them, use your common sense. We know very well, like shells, there is a certain cycle to life to it. And of course, like especially plastic bottles, mineral bottles. But again, I can't speak for everybody, but for operations such as mine, Dive Bonioba, for example, we actually discourage people to bring their own water bottles there, unless it's the reusable ones. And we also make sure we have the garbage bag, which we have a special garbage bag where any disposable stuff goes in there and we'll take it back every day when we come back. There's no saying discarding in the island or whatever, even though there's a bin in the island. So literally, whatever we bring there, we bring it back out.
Yeah.
And again, especially single-use plastic, we discourage that on our boats. And we also provide drinking waters and all this with proper containers and so on, reusable containers. Now, again, this is not just the tourists. This is also the operators itself. And of course, tourism is not a new thing for Sabah. So most operators do play ball and follow the rules and follow the, what are the, I wouldn't say rules, what are the benefit for to protecting the environment. Mm-hmm. But again, also one more thing I always like to tell people, there's this Native American saying, we did not inherit this earth from our parents. We are actually borrowing it from our children. So whatever we do now, it's not our entitlement. It's actually our children's future we are playing with. So whatever you do, use your common sense and protect it as much as we can.
Definitely. Couldn't have said it better myself. And, you know, while we're on the topic of, you know, ecotourism, I mean, there is a huge push for that, right? And people do want to travel responsibly and make as little impact as possible, right? But of course, we do come across some amount of greenwashing, right? I guess, what are your recommendations for travelers to ensure that they support responsible travel operators and travel sites, you know, which truly practice environmental sustainability and conservation? Like, you know, I've come across some, this was not in Sabah, but somewhere else I went to, you know, they took us to touch the turtle and I was like, no, don't do that. You know, we shouldn't be doing that. You know, those sorts of things. What are your advice for anyone who's out there going for a trip underwater?
Okay. This is a very good point you brought up. There's always the good side and the dark side, right? When it comes to the operators, right?
Yeah.
But the only suggestion, it's very hard to define who are the good ones, who are the ones who are not going to play ball or and will do whatever they need just to make the buck. My personal suggestion is always go for the registered operators, meaning to say that make sure they are a registered tour operator with a KPL license, all right? Because why? They have a minimum set of rules to follow to the local authorities. And it's also a protection for the tourist itself. If anything goes wrong, these people are covered. For whatever sense, you know.
Yeah.
And also for diving wise, look for dive centers which are actually registered with agency. There are many agencies. I'm not going to tag to one agency, but there are many agencies out there. Make sure they are following according to the agency rule to be able to be recognized as a dive center. Like, for example, for us as a PADI center, right? PADI 5-star IDC center per se, we need to follow the guidelines. Anytime we are out of the guidelines, we don't get the rating and so on. So we will actually practice according to what we need. And believe me, with this new age, all the agency has environment in as one of their priority as an end of the regulation. So choose those operators or those service provider which are registered to something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And definitely don't consume endangered wildlife or meat and, you know, eggs. And I mean, like you said, use your common sense, isn't it?
Common sense plays a big role in it. Yes. Now, just so that everybody understands that there is a big hoo-ha about turtle eggs in Sabah. Now, given the fact that in Sabah, turtle eggs is not allowed to be consumed, period. Any turtle eggs being consumed in Sabah, it's illegal.
Mm.
I can't say it for Malaysia because from my understanding, I believe certain states allow it.
Yeah.
But for Sabah, it's no-no. So, whoever the tourist coming from Peninsula Malaysia coming to Sabah, if you see turtle eggs being served, please note that whatever you're doing, it's illegal. Turtle egg consumption in Sabah is illegal itself.
Okay, all right. And I guess, you know, there's a lot of people traveling now as families, isn't it, Johnny? So we've got the younger folks, we've got, you know, the kids, we've got elderly as well. What would you recommend they do, you know, if they're just in Sabah for a short while, you know, that sort of like takes in everyone's different needs?
To cater for the family travelers, I will call it family travelers, especially children. People as young as 10 years old, they can start diving, right? And Kota Kinabalu is the best place to offer that, and where the children and parents can go diving together, or if not, it's just a short boat ride away, as I mentioned. Yeah, it's a great place where you can opt for other tour experience like going for whitewater rafting or even the mountains. So there are a lot to offer in Kota Kinabalu itself. So destination as for family, Kota Kinabalu will be a good choice.
Okay. All right. I always have to ask this, you know, because a lot of people hit, you know, when they go on holidays, they look for interesting places for, you know, food, right? Foodies out there, I suppose. What are some of your recommendations in terms of local dishes to try in Sabah?
Okay. Oh, you asked the right person. Those probably listening will be laughing too. I love my food.
Tell me then. What must I come and try?
Okay, literally, when you come to Sabah, now here's a bit of a contradictory. One minute I'm talking about conservation and protecting the environment and blah, blah, blah. And next thing I know, you come to Sabah, you will need to experience the freshness of our seafood.
Well, not endangered seafood, right? Clearly.
Yeah,
so
not
there
endangered.
There is a difference there.
Correct. Not endangered, and also buy from the responsible retailers or sellers, so on, restaurants. But again, seafood is not the only thing to eat in Sabah. Sabah itself, I would say, the historical go a long way. Anybody come to Sabah, try to find out why our state actually offers a lot of noodles dishes.
Okay.
We have so many different types of noodles, from halal to non-halal, all noodles. Reason, there's a reason to it. And also our bread. You know, if you think bread in wherever is good, try to come into Sabah and experience our bread itself.
Really?
I have a friend who's a baker. When he comes over to Sabah itself, he will always praise the bread in Sabah itself. Yeah.
Really? I did not know that. Okay,
yeah.
Something to definitely try. Okay.
Yeah, we have the traditional bread. We have the modernized bakeries and even noodles. We have noodles. We have the modernized, you know, fancy-pansy noodles. And we have the traditional noodles. Both halal and non-halal, we have all this. So come and experience that as well. It's a food trip. Sabah is a food trip. So
okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Johnny, for joining me today. But before I let you go, you know, one final message from you. Why should Sabah be next on our Cuti Malaysia list, especially for those seeking a marine-themed holiday?
Well, although we are in the same country, we are a total different world in there. And our accessibility to everything. We have the highest peak in Southeast Asia. We have the deepest sea in Malaysia. So we have everything, literally the jungle, the food, the culture. Come over, you know, it's as good as going overseas to a foreign land.
Yes, and it's just breathtakingly beautiful. I've been to Sabah once and my God, it is such a beautiful state. So definitely, you know, do go and visit Sabah. My thanks again to you. I've been speaking to Johnny Chu. He's the Qualified Padi Course Director and Tech Instructor Trainer. He is the boss at Dive Borneo Bah Sendirian Berhad. And he was talking to us about, you know, why Sabah is pretty much a slice of tropical paradise and why it should be next on our diving list, you know, if we want to do some Cuti Cuti Malaysia. If you'd like to find out more, just head to malaysia.com. travel, and you can find out all about the different sites in Sabah to visit. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.